Hi, welcome to the Audio Engineering Podcast with me, Streaky,
and me, Shay.
And today we're going to be discussing equipment chains.
Yep, effects chains. And
how I use those for mastering and how Shay uses them for mixing and recording. So I reckon you should crack on with this, Shay, because you've got a lot more to say on the subject for mixing than me. So how do you, I know you have sort of certain templates, but how do you set things up? What do you go into, what do you come out of, and why?
Yeah, I mean, for a mix, I like to get a bit geeky when it comes to sort of effects chains. And beforehand, it was I would have different effects chains for different styles of music. Whereas now I kind of have one effects chain for every style of music. And it basically works, like, over time. I've got it
down
to...
You find what works.
Yeah. And it's like you sort of try and make it as simple as possible. Like, at the start, you've got too many. And it's majority plugins, like it's 99% plugin based, but you always start with far too much stuff in the chain. And then over time you end up getting rid of things and just having the essential bits in. So like how I'd run mine, say for a mix bus, yeah, over the whole mix. So like not subgroup buses, like your overall mix bus, so your mix bus processing would be, it would go straight into an EQ, which would be a mid-side EQ. And that is just for... a lot of the times I don't use it in mid-side. It's just there if I do need to use it as mid-side, like it's mid-side capable. That's like as utility for what happens next. So I'm not really using it to add any frequencies or like accentuate any things. I'm using it to cut mostly. So I'm doing like clinical things, so like low cuts, really tight Q, subtraction EQ, things like that. Just so when I go next into the next part, I'll only be processing the frequencies that I want in the sound, if that makes sense.
Right, yeah.
After the EQ, it started off being straight into a compressor. And that would have been like a VCA style analog compressor, so which was like half valve, something that was like a custom build thing a few years ago.
But when you do that, surely if you're compressing the signal, you're losing a lot of the juice from the compression straight away, rather than EQing it first and then compressing it and then EQing it after the compressor.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. Like I'm EQing it. Is that what you're saying? Like I EQ it first and then after the EQ, I go into the compressor.
Yeah, okay, I get it.
But
yeah,
the only that compressor, I mean, is doing hardly anything. That compressor's doing maybe a dB, and all it is just the flavor because I like the sound of the compressor. So I'm not really using it as a compressor. I'm not using it to squash stuff. I'm using it just to get a bit of a character and a bit of an analog sound, a bit of a warmth to it that I can't necessarily get from the plugins. But it's subtle, do you know what I mean? It's one of those things where it's just a bit of beef, pretty much. Then after that, it's another EQ, and it's just a standard like linear phase EQ, where this is where I do my additions. So the first EQ would have been like utility, getting rid of things, getting ready to go into compression, and then after the compression, I'll be lifting certain frequencies that I think sound nice after compression. And again, that time it's normally like high shelves where I'm just adding a bit of air to something. Maybe a little bit of a cut again in the low end if I need to, but I shouldn't have to if I've already done it before. A little bit of a boost in the low end, not on a shelf this time, but on like a bell curve, just to beef out the sound a little bit. Like I try to keep my mixes as close to the level balance sound as I can from the mix bus. Like my mix bus processing doesn't really alter the sound of the mix that much. It just makes it sound as a bit fatter, which over time I've found is a lot better way of mixing. Rather than mixing, sticking a load of bus compression on and bus effects, and it completely changes the sound of the mix, so you rely on your mix bus for the sound of your mix.
Right, yeah.
Now it's just more like EQ for utility, then goes into some really slight, subtle compression, back into EQ to add some the niceness, airs, bit of low end. And then after that, it goes into like saturation. So I like using tape emulations, again, as plugins. So again, just to get that thickness and that warmth.
Which ones do you like? Do you like the UAD ones or do you like the Slate ones? Or
I tried the UAD ones, but I prefer the Slate one. I just love the Slate tape sound. Like there's a couple of Waves ones that were pretty good, like the Kramer tape, that was pretty good. But I found the most versatile and the best one that I can literally open the plugin, change a couple of settings, and like, I mean, not even sometimes changing the settings, it's just the input and output that I'm changing. It just sounds awesome. Like it makes it sound thicker and it sounds like a tape machine. It sounds like tape saturation, like rather than some of the others, like some of the UAD ones, they're good, but they're not for me. They're not my preferred sound, my preferred flavour.
Is that like, because of the machine that they're emulating, though? Because doesn't the Slate, I don't know if I'm right here, but does the Slate do the Studa and the, and is it the ATR that the...
I can't remember, to be honest, what one it is. But the UAD ones are like specific to the tape machines. But I mean, even then, it's like it's the sound that I like from it. Like, I don't really care what it's modelling. I just care what the outcome sound is. But I love all the Slate plugins. Like recently, they just bought out the.
You're a Slate Valve. Disciple, aren't you?
Yeah, Slate slut, I'm afraid. they just bought out the Valve emulation sort of console Valve emulation modules for their mix rack, and they are amazing. Like they're now on my mix bus all the time, and I've got like the London setting, the New York setting, and I basically A/B between the two to see what works, and it's either on or off. Like, I'm not really doing much lifting and changing of turning of knobs. I'm just trying to get flavours to make my mix of my level balance and everything from my mix just sound a little bit fatter and thicker. So I can get a nice thick RMS level before I have to send to mastering.
So you're, are you going to go with a control surface, Slate control surface soon then?
The Raven?
So into Slate.
I'd love to. But at work, at the ACM, they've just got one in for like to play with. And I went in the other morning just to try it. Just to see if I could try it out, but it wasn't on.
He's been getting involved with Metropolis, hasn't he? He's been doing a load of stuff there.
Well, yeah, they did the Slate Fest this Saturday just gone. They did the Slate Fest there where MSM was there, Da Vinci was there. A few other people were there doing like masterclasses, showing off the Raven and all the plugins and that. But I mean, I'd love to have one. It would be a really nice thing to have. But I don't feel it's essential.
They're not mega money though, are they?
Under $1,000, you get one for about £900.
I saw somebody making beats on it, and I thought that looked pretty cool. I mean, it's not something I'd do.
Yeah. He was doing like drum programming on one and stuff. Like, it was just crazy.
Yeah, it looked like it worked quite well.
Yeah.
But, seems like quite a nice thing to play with rather than having to use a mouse all the time.
But going back to like the effects change, like for my saturation and sort of compressory characteristic saturation type stuff, it's always Slate. But in terms of like EQs and things like that, like the mid-side EQ that I have first is a UAD plugin. I find the UAD EQs are the nicest. Do you know what I mean? I used to have the Pultec on the master, just with broad strokes on the Pultec lifting the high end. I've just recently, after our conversation the other day, just trialing the Backs EQ because it's so nice, isn't it? It's really good, and it's annoying because now I know I'm going to have to buy it.
What frequencies are you doing?
Just the higher fruit, just like lifting on high shelf. So like doing that cut, you know, you're talking about that, the high cut, but then lifting into the high cut and just getting a bit of air out of it.
Yeah. So there's also another goodie that works really well is 18K taking like half a dB or 1 dB off at 18K.
Yeah.
That works an absolute treat for focusing the mid range
before
you go into a compressor. So it makes it kind of, because it's, I don't know, it's just obviously it's rebalancing that area before it goes into the compressor.
It's prepping it before compression, isn't it? So like the compressor doesn't see that much.
I don't know, I haven't looked at the specs because I don't know where the shelf starts, but it's probably quite low, isn't it? It's probably sort of 5K or something before it gets up to 18.
One of the last things in the chain, like before limiting, a lot of the time I wouldn't even bother with the limiter, but sometimes.
So where are you putting the? Where are you putting the backs then in this chain? Where do you put the backs?
Well, the backs
are you putting
is
at
just
the front
before
or
the limiter.
No,
it goes at the very end. This is my sheen. So okay. Like how I work it at the very top of the chain is utility.
That's why you're adding at 18K.
Pretty much, yeah. So like at the top of the chain
it's
is utility.
It's got a nice top end on it, hasn't it?
It's just really clean, and like it's not harsh. Another one that I found that was really good was the MAAG, the Marg EQ. It's got a 40 kilohertz air band, 40 kilohertz shelf. Crazy. Like, I mean, we're not dogs. We shouldn't be able to hear that. But you know that the end of that curve is still going to be around about the 20K mark, and 18, 19K. And that just really opens a mix. Like some of the students I showed literally yesterday, over the whole mix were just like gobsmacked at like, Jesus, how is that? How does it make it sound like that? Like, it doesn't sound like the Logic EQ when you lift in sort of 20K. So that's kind of nice. But that is at the very end. That's just before limiting. And normally I'll only put the limiter on if I want to get a reference for loudness if I'm listening to the mix in the car.
Yeah.
But normally, yeah, that'll be the last thing in the chain. A little bit of air, just
what's
the
limiter you're using?
FabFilter Pro L. Can't right. use anything else, to be honest. Used to use the Waves L2.
Yeah,
because that was staple. That was just it. That was kind of what was done.
It's got a really nice sound to it, though. The L2, it's like very pop sound.
But I don't think you can push it anywhere near as far as the Pro L without getting.
Oh God, no!
Like the Pro L, you can end up getting like 5-6 dB worth of gain reduction.
Oh, I mean?
Like you're getting like -4-5 RMS, and you're just about getting into the I'm ruining my dynamic sound.
Yeah, so, you'll be lucky if you get two out of the L2.
Yeah.
Although people will argue with that and say that you need to push it to 8.
Yeah. But then again, it all depends on the RMS of your mix that you're putting into
it. Exactly. It depends what you're going into. Yeah.
I mean, if the dynamic range of your mix is huge and you've got massive spikes and loads too dynamic, when you're slamming it, you're going to get rid of all those transients. So as if you can keep a nice transient with a thick RMS at mix, which is why I do all these little increment stages of like, small stage compression, 1 dB gain reduction here, a little bit of saturation where I'm thickening the sound up. The compressor settings are always exactly the same, pretty much. I rarely change the settings. It's just a threshold amount.
So I would say, obviously, because I know you, is that you've taken the principles that I use for mastering and moved them into mixing. So for the individual tracks, you've restyled what I do, but for a mix situation,
pretty much. And I think it's probably your fault, not in a bad way, but I think it's like from watching what you do in mastering and then knowing what is needed to make your life easier as a mastering engineer. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like understanding that the loudness isn't from the master, the loudness is from the mix, and understanding that in order to get a loud master, you need to make sure that the balance is right, and it's good to have the frequencies set where you want them to be within a stereo field and things like that.
And space in the mix.
Yeah.
So making sure that the sounds you've got are good sounds rather than having five of them.
Yeah.
So that there's enough room for a mastering engineer to push it further. So that's how you get it loud.
Yeah.
Think Neptunes. Yeah. Pharrell.
No, I've gone from years ago throwing everything at a mix. I mean 10-15 plugins a track. Do you know what I mean? Every single track's got this on it, it's got that.
It's gonna sound awful.
It's rubbish. But then now I'm doing sometimes 50% of the tracks in the mix have nothing on them. They are just leveled and panned where they need to go. I mean it might have an EQ on it, but it's a low cut. Do you know what I mean? It's not like 7 band EQ and
I'm getting rid of the waffle.
Yeah, and it's like beforehand I was like running out of bands on like a 7 band EQ, having to open another one. Not needed.
The thing is, what people need to realize is it doesn't have to be difficult.
Exactly.
This is in everything, not just in music, but people always want to you always want to overcomplicate things.
Yeah.
You always want to make things harder than they actually need to be.
You feel like you have to do something.
You just got to keep things simple. It's better when you've got no tools to play with and you've got to make the most of what you've got. And then, you know, but don't, so you don't have to do it. If you haven't got the tool to do it, you don't do it.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's better. It's better to be more natural and simple. And it's so easy to throw everything at it. Such an amateur move.
It is. But I think you have to go through that in order to realize that it's not needed.
The thing is, listen to this.
Yeah, go on.
No, I'm saying, listen to this, we're saying. We're trying to save people time. Yeah. This is the whole point of doing these podcasts, is to help people understand that we can save you 5 years of fannying around by just listening and saying, okay, forget that, try this, and then do it. Do it for a month, right? Do it for a month, see if your mixes are better by doing hardly anything to the mixes and just doing what you can do with one EQ, one compressor, blah, blah, like you've just said.
Literally.
And then tell me that your mixes aren't better in a month. Yeah. And it's a complete lie if they're not, because it's just so simple.
Yeah, I mean,
I wish someone had told me basically 20 years ago, just chill out.
Yeah.
You know, I was fortunate when I started that I had no equipment, so I didn't have any choice. So that was lucky. I learned that way. So, but you know, people listen to all these podcasts and listen to and watch all these videos on YouTube and all that, looking for the secret and looking for how it's going to make. And it's like, but they don't put any of it into practice.
Yeah.
They'll still go away and put loads of crap on stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, hang on, you've just watched a load of videos. You've just listened to podcasts. You've done so much homework
and research,
and you're still not.
Yeah,
you're still trying to look for something else. Stop looking.
Yeah, it's like I had a pretty good breakthrough earlier on last week. Like I had a tutorial with a student, came in with a mix bus chain. Says the mix is just pumping. It's when it drops into the drop, it sounds like it's gone down in volume. It's just sounding thin. Whatever I lift, whatever I do, it just the thinner it gets.
So you know, like, straight away, take everything off.
Basically, yeah. So I knew.
I know without, where you're going to go. Opening straight
the
laptop, away.
Isn't it? Even without looking at the session.
Yeah. I said to him, I don't even have to listen to it.
Yeah. I said to him, I guarantee you have got far too much on your mix bus. He's like, oh, no, it's not that much. So I thought, have you got more than four things on there? Oh, well, yeah. Well, then that's far too much. So like, I opened the laptop, looked at it, and he had about seven plugins on there. All compression, EQ,
all saturation. Fighting against each
other.
Yeah,
man, all doing completely nuts stuff. And he I said to him, why have you got this? Oh, well, I watched a couple of videos and they said it's a good idea to do this. It's like, yeah, but they're not making the tune you're making. It's worked for what they're doing. So like, we literally got rid of it all. I gave him a standard stock Logic EQ with some broad curves, you know what I mean? A little bit of utility, but mainly broad curves, and a standard stock Logic compressor. And the mix was fine, perfect. It was like, oh, that sounds spot on. Like, what did you do? It's like, this, nothing.
Nothing.
I did pretty much nothing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I kept your balance. I haven't moved around any of the faders. The stereo image was back to where it was again. It was nice and deep. It was thick. Everything was up front. It had a good RMS level. And it was just down to the EQ the EQ points I was doing, and like a slow attack time, fast release on the compressor. Do you know what I mean? So I'm still keeping the dynamic and I'm just squashing the meat of the track.
He was just putting one. It's the same as when you're making, say, a beat or something. It's like, find one thing that works well rather than having 20 beats all together. And it's the same thing, but he was getting too confused with his plugins.
It's because there's too much available.
One compressor's pushing against the other one, and then your EQing, one's going up, one's going down in the same place.
Well, the problem
was
they're
fighting against each other. It sounds crap.
At the start of the channel, there was a compressor first up. So the first thing on the mix bus was a compressor. And it was taking off like 5-6 dB straight away.
Yeah. So that's all its peaks gone.
Yeah, so that's your mix finish. So whatever you do from that point on,
you're fighting the compressor.
You're fighting an undynamic track. You've got nothing to work on. You're trying to put dynamics back in that aren't there. So get rid of that straight up.
Yeah.
And, just hone it back. Utility EQ, compressor, EQ again if you want to accentuate a few frequencies. But on those broader curves, like adding a bit of air, adding a bit of bottom end. But again, like you say, it comes from watching you master records and understanding the least amount of work that you do or the least amount of processing you do, the better it's going to sound. And it's going to sound like the original track.
And I've said this before maybe in a podcast, but it goes... From my experience, it goes back to everybody that I've worked with who's been an amazing engineer, not just mastering, but everyone I've watched as they don't do anything. Yeah. It's like I've said before about the Sex Pistols guy who was the main mix engineer, but he was he was called a balance engineer in the old days rather than a mix engineer. I mean, mix engineers are kind of a new thing, really. Yeah. You know, when I say new, sort of 20 years ago, but you know, before that, it was balance engineers and then mastering engineers. But the balance engineer, all he's doing is listening to what's been recorded because it should have been recorded with the right sounds.
Yeah.
That's the whole point of a good recording engineer.
Yeah.
He goes in the studio. They had someone who set the mics up. He was a mic man. That's all he did. He was a mic man.
He knew that this mic was good at that direction on this.
It's going to sound well. It's going to sound great there. That's how I do it.
Yeah.
And then you had the guy who came in and recorded it and it sounded great. And then he balanced it. And then so it's like all that process was all cleaned up before you had to then sort of fix it in the mix, if you like.
Yeah.
And so, balancing it off. So you've got to try and get everything right all the way along just by trying to do as little as possible, but doing it right.
Yeah. What's your preferred chain of events in terms of mastering? Like, what do you start with?
It's very similar to yours. I have, I go through an EQ, first of all, whether that be a,
it's normally digital,
sometimes. I have analog MS EQ as well at the front. So I have a choice of a few different ones. So I'll have a digital one before I go into the converters.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll have a analog MS one, or I'll have I have the backs up front as well. So
oh, so you have that then at the front.
And I'll also have a de-esser before all of that. Okay. So what I'll do is, if it's very S-y coming into the equipment,
yeah,
I'd rather trim those S's off. Or that if there's a hi-hat that's going crazy, anything that's tizzy,
yeah,
kind of clean that up first of all before I start getting into EQing, so that I can then, because usually that's very digital sounding.
Yeah.
So by taking those S's off with the nice analog de-esser, I can then add some nice analog EQ, which then gives it some life.
Yeah.
And puts some top end in that's nice top end rather than tizzy, horrible top end.
Yeah.
And with the backs, then I can, like I said earlier, I can calm the tops by doing that, doing some cuts or, you know, turning the shelves down, adding a little bit to the bottom. So it's kind of, I'm using that to rebalance. So what my thought process is, I'm trying to sort everything out before I get into doing any proper work as an EQing and compression. I'm just going, okay, what have I got? Okay, well, the bass is really big. The tops aren't, so I've got to rebalance that straight away. So I'm trying to get the balance right, trying to get it in the ballpark before I can then start doing any kind of niceties.
Yeah.
I don't hardly compress things. I always use the compressor. After all that EQ at the front, whichever one I choose to do, then I'll go through a compressor just for sound, just for the vibe, the flavor again, as we've said. Then I'll go into an EQ after that to then do my detailed work. Then I'll go into another compressor, which is normally like a multi-band compressor.
Okay.
So
yeah.
That if I've pumped some bass in, I can then grab hold of it in the multi-band and tighten up the low end. I usually use that for low end. If there's any highs that are still hanging around, I can trim those off in the top. So. Yeah. You know, I use the multiband as a kind of dynamic EQ, if you like.
Okay.
So after a normal EQ, I'm using that as a dynamic EQ to sort of keep just carry on rebalancing it to get it where I want it.
See, I stay away from multiband on a mix bus. They're normally for my groups and things, like on drums. Overall, I'll have a multiband on drums, but every time I've put it over a mix bus, I think I find I ruin the balance a bit too much.
Yeah, but you've got to be careful.
Yeah.
I mean, it's quite a, you know, I'm kind of using it to rebalance what I'm doing. So if I'm more likely to add, I'm really into low mids and low end. So I think that's where there's most of the gain in to get a good sound is in the low mids and low end. I think you can get things sounding good there. So I kind of will probably push into the compressor a little bit and then use the compressor to make it sharp, to make it a little bit sharper or punchier or something. So that's kind of what I'm doing with a multiband in that position. Then I'll probably use another compressor after that just for another bit of flavor if I fancy it.
Yeah.
They're just, you know, so I'm not really using these compressors to do any processing, as I'm saying, I'm trying to not do anything.
Okay.
I'm just using them to add more analog warmth or valve warmth or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of it. I might use an EQ at the end because there's been a bit of compression going on. And because at the end I'm going into limiters. So I'm listening to the limiters. So as I'm listening to the limiters, I use the final EQ to EQ against what the limiter's doing. So if the limiter's getting too bright, then I'll be EQing against that, or I'll have to add a little bit more air on because of the multi-band compression or any de-essing I'm doing. So it changes all the time what I'm doing, but that's kind of a rough chain of events of how I work.
It yours goes EQ, compression in terms of like de-essing, EQ again, compression, EQ compression, EQ limiting. So you're step by step, and each one's tiny little increments on each one.
Hardly anything.
Yeah, so you're almost compensating for the last step that you did.
I'm gain staging through that equipment.
Yeah.
With the EQ and the compression, I'm gain staging all the way to get it louder.
Yeah.
So then when I go to the compressor, I usually use, say, two limiters, and I don't have to then push them too hard.
Yeah.
And then I can adjust the sound of those limiters and against the EQ that I'm doing, so that I know that those limiters are not overstretching themselves,
yeah,
so that I can, you know, I'm not going to get any pumping, I'm not going to get any distortion. I can just use them for their sound and to get things nice and loud and just round it off, rather than, I think when people push into the limiters too hard, they're using them as compressors rather than what they're supposed to be doing, which is just shaving the peaks off. So if you can get all that done by the time you get to the compressors, and as you say, get a decent RMS coming out of the A to D converter, then you're, you know, then you can round it off nicely and get a nice sound.
So what limiters
wise?
Don't
know if anyone's followed any of that.
No, see, I did. Like, I think it's interesting. And the thing is, because I've watched you do it as well before, now looking back at it, even though at the time I was there watching you do it, now it makes a lot more sense of actually thinking about it, like going from a bit of EQ, okay, now let's compress those things that we've done. Now go back in the EQ, add a little touch more, and then compress that back down, but only slightly. So you've still kept your dynamic, but you're...
Yeah, I'm not touching the dynamics at all, really. I mean, the only way I'm touching the dynamics is with a multiband, but that's only because I'm going against what I've EQ'd earlier.
I mean, limiters what are you using? You said you use a couple of limiters, so limiters wise, what are you using?
I use a few different ones. I like the L2 hardware.
Yep.
I like the Vice hardware. That's quite expensive, kind of nice one.
It's not really clinical as well, the Vice, isn't it? The Vice is very transparent as a limiter.
It's really nice. It's just clean and you can't hear it, which is what you want from a limiter, I think.
Yeah.
It's not something that you can push too hard. It's just, you know, good at getting a little bit of level.
Yeah.
You can use it in MS mode as well, which is quite handy.
Yeah.
Then I use, main thing I use is the FabFilter Pro L Basics.
Yep. Lovely.
And the Sony Oxford occasionally, depending on, they all sound different. So it's depending on what sound I've got in the first place and what I'm trying to get at the end.
Okay.
But I'll use a combination of a couple of them just because I don't want to push one too hard.
Like what were you saying just before about having the limiter not doing anything, like not noticeable? Do you remember a while ago when we had that, the Dangerous compressor?
Yeah.
And we were like testing that out for a bit, and I took it home and had a bit of a play around with it. And I said, I didn't like it. Because I wasn't into it at all. I didn't like it because it didn't do anything. To me, it didn't do anything. But in a way, that's probably what it's supposed to... Like, it was compressing, but I couldn't hear it.
That's great, but for its money, I want something that's... Well, if it's not going to do anything with a compression, which is fine, I get it, but I want a sound... I don't use compression in that way. I use compression to get a sound.
Exactly, yeah.
And to add a tone, add a flavour. So for me, it's just pointless. You know, I need something that I can go, okay, that's the sound I get from that. So the Avalon, for instance, has got a sound which I like. So or a Manly or something, you know, you're going to get that big creamy sound. Fairchild, it's going to be really warm. You know, it's different things.
Yeah, and, you know, I had that over the mix bus and I was like getting 3 dB, 4 dB compression. I'm thinking, but it doesn't sound like, is this bypassed? Like, is this working? Like, oh, I don't like it, it's rubbish. But then thinking about it, probably no, it's actually really good because you're getting, as a compressor, like, by definition, a compressor, it's compressing your signal and getting your meat up and your RMS level up without actually sounding like it is.
Yeah, exactly. So it's amazing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's really good. But for me, no, I want a compressor. I go through my compressor and I built my compressor for tone. The whole point of it is harmonic distortion, valve sound. Needs to. I want to hear the VCAs. I want to hear the compressor. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, in the same way that I use the Mass Select. The Mass Select's really clean and like very similar to the Dangerous, where it's you don't hear it, but it's just got.
It still has a sound. It's got a posh.
I still want it to have. Yeah, exactly. Like that poshness, or I want it to do something where I think, okay, I'm going to that unit for that reason because it gives me that extra 3D-ness or that extra sound to the the dynamics.
I think that's pretty good, that, isn't it?
I think we've sort of covered different ways of working from a mix and a mastering point of view. Try and get it right in the first place. If your mix is getting too complicated, I've said it before, but take everything off and start again, because you're going round the houses. It's the best advice you could ever get.
And think, what do you need, not what you want.
Stop.
Yeah.
If you're going round, if you're on the mix and it's taking you longer than you think it should normally take you to do, and you're thinking, I just haven't got it, I can't get it. I do this with mastering all the time. I think I'll just go on and on and on, and then I think, what am I doing?
Yeah, leave.
Just everything off. Yeah, go for a walk, take everything off of it, come back, listen to it flat, go, okay, what's the least I can do here to get the best result?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you go, okay, I'll add a bit of EQ. How does that sound? Mm. All right, nice. Well, if I add a bit of compression, is that helping? Is that taking away?
Yeah.
Add another bit of EQ after that. Your job's a good one. Mm. I mean, whether you're mixing into a limiter, now there's another whole can of worms, but don't, basically.
Pretty much, yeah.
But anyway, apart from that, that's let's go before we carry on talking for the rest of our lives.
I know.
And all right, so thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you next week, hopefully, if Shay can...
pull my finger out and actually turn up. hard week, man. It's been a hard couple of weeks.
Yeah. That gym.
Yeah.
All right, nice. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe, and please do us a favour and tell your friends. If you've got anybody that's into audio engineering, it would do us a favour to, give us a review in iTunes or pass on that we're doing this to someone else, because it makes it all worth it for us. The comments we get is our energy.
That's it.
To do more. So please comment and subscribe. Anyway, goodbye.
Bye.